a dream or was it real? We crossed the line and it was on.
We crossed the line, it was on this time.
I've been denying how I feel, you've been denying.
2017, ladies and gentlemen, somehow we made it. I wouldn't, oh no, it's not 2017, 2017 just passed, Jesus. All right, now I'm all shook.
That's the kind of year it's been.
All right, this is where I cut. There you go, okay. It's 2018, ladies and gentlemen, somehow we made it, and I don't think there's many people out there who would say 2017 was a good year, but for music, for entertainment, it wasn't that bad, actually. In fact, I'd say it was a pretty large step up from 2016, and here to discuss that with me today is my brand new in 2016 co-host, Nico Vasillo.
Hi there, everybody. It's me. It's Nico. How you guys doing? How you doing, Chris?
You know, I've been better, but we get to talk about fun stuff, and it's going to be a good time. And also with us is the commissioner, general manager, owner,
sports
director,
metaphors.
Producer, the Tommy Wiseau of ooh. Cage Club, Joey Lewandowski.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
I want to say right off the bat, if you like the last 10 minutes of Now 15 Side B, you are going to love this episode.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a whoopsie, but it's, you know, it's okay. It's just a preview. It was a little teaser trailer.
I actually thought that Now 15 was, you know, some of the most, I think it's some of the clearest we are. I think I literally can't stop listening to the baby bash bit. It makes me laugh so hard no matter what I'm doing. I laugh just as hard in real life as I'm laughing in the podcast, if not harder. The baby bash bit gets me every time. That's my best of 2017.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, in 2018, do not baby bash. That's all we ask. It's been a rough year for a lot of people already. Don't baby bash. Just don't do it.
That's why we're having the ice bucket baby bash challenge.
There's gonna be like pro sports players doing PSAs.
Please don't bash any babies.
It's gonna be that.
We really appreciate it.
What's that guy? That Gronkowski dude, and it's just gonna be him being like protein. Don't baby bash and shit. It's going to be great.
That's essentially the Tide Pod thing that he just did. And it was incredible.
Yeah, okay. This year's already off to a rousing start.
You know, I'm not going to lie. This year has been, like, incredibly stupid for reasons I've kind of enjoyed so far. I'm a fan of 2018 so far, but I feel like we're about to drop off a cliff. I just got that gut feeling, you know? Like, the shoe could drop. Is that the right phrase? The shoe could drop anytime. Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Other shoe.
Whatever.
Other foot.
Anyway, music.
I don't think feet drop. Let the feet drop.
So, there's three albums that we came up with that we've all heard, but we're going to kind of jump around and talk about individual things that we've liked. But first, I want to start with, you know, so that we can move up on like a better note. Let's talk about some disappointments in 2017. Was there anything musically that really kind of bummed you guys out of 2017?
You know, I think we all have artists that like that our heart connects with in a really real and visceral way. That sort of sense of, you know, oh my God, I know when I'm 45, I'm still going to love this artist. And for me, one of those artists is Nelly Furtado.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed her new record, The Ride. I actually like a lot of it. But I don't find myself itching to replay it like her earlier releases. I actually, it's a lot of it gets stuck in my head a lot. I think it's a really fun, not fun, it's actually a really powerful record. But for some reason, it just never got stuck on my replay the way I wanted it to.
Yeah, I gave it one listen and I was like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I get it. I'm fine. It's nothing that I ever kind of doubled back to, which is, I mean, it's been a long time. I don't know if there was an album between this and Loose, but I mean, it's been a while. We were in college when that came out, and
one record between.
Okay, I don't know if we just grew up or it just didn't click. It missed the mark for me too, and I haven't really doubled back to it at all yet.
So that was a disappointment.
Joey, how about you?
I didn't have any musical disappointments last year. I don't, as I've said on every time I'm on this podcast, I don't listen to a ton of music. And so I only find myself listening to good stuff, I think, that people sort of vouch for. And so I don't really have any disappointments. But I also don't have that many secret successes either. So musically, no disappointments last year.
Did you hear the LCD Sound System Return album?
I did. So, okay, so here's my thing with LCD Sound System, is that I never listened to them before 2016, summer 2016. Okay. And then I saw them at Lolla, and they were amazing. They put on an incredible show, and I loved it. And I was like, oh, I should listen to them. And so I listened to some of their albums. I'm like, these are really good. And so I listened to the new one, and I was like, oh, this is fine. But I haven't had this connection to them, so it's not like I'm disappointed by it. It's just like, oh, I can just go listen to those other albums I've heard one time, as opposed to this one that I've heard one time.
I think so. That, all right, you coming into the LCD Sound System in 2016 makes a little bit more sense as to why this record landed a little bit differently. I feel like when you have like a massive retirement show, like the last one, and it's a huge deal, and it like sells out the Garden three nights in a row, and there's bands that come out to like see you and support you in your last show, and then like 3 years later you drop a mediocre album, you've soiled a lot of goodwill that you had. 10 years is one thing, but like you don't get that big retirement send off and get to go like shit the bed.
I think part of it for me even is there's this idea, we live in the age of revival, unfortunately, right now. Everything is a revival of something. It's getting annoying. And, I mean that like, I don't, we're about to talk about a bunch of interesting revivals. That's not the point.
No, but like, I don't want to cut you off, Nico, but like, I'm watching right now, as we record this, The X-Files is back for its 11th season, and I watched season 10 last year. And, like, it's not great. Like, there are really good episodes, and there's episodes that I like, but that doesn't ruin for me at all what I love about the first 9 seasons, the original 9 seasons, because even that, I guess, you know, by the end, it wasn't as good as it was. But, like, I can watch these and not be, and not be disappointed, and, like, not think of the show less as a whole. It's just sort of this other thing, right? So, I don't know, even if I was super into LCD Sound System, I don't know if, like, a mediocre album coming out would have personally, you know, ruined any goodwill that I had.
Well, I mean, like, let me, I feel like I'm kind of come at this a little glovesy, like punchy punch, but I don't mean it like that at all. So if at any point I sound like horrific, just be like, Nico, the tone, bro. So, okay, I predominantly like Aging Divas, which is the gayest fucking shit in the world, but I've made it very clear that, you know, I worship at the cock, like at the cock of Tori Amos, Janet Jackson, and Mariah Carey, and each one of them is an aging diva in their own way. And I don't mean that diva like the unfortunate colloquial. I mean it like woman of great power who commands a stage in that very Great Dane
kind. Oh, I thought maybe you meant it like and, diva cup. You know, the thing that you that collects your period blood.
That can't be staying in the podcast.
Jesus Christ!
That can't be staying in the podcast.
Keep it in. That's my favorite. That's my favorite. So I'm so glad. I'm so glad that. Yeah. Oh my God. We're such classy men. So
it's a real thing.
There were each periods of time where like I had to like break up with each of them for a little bit. You know, Janet recorded records with songs like "You Make Me So Moist," and Tori Amos became her own executive record producer, and that means that she doesn't understand how to self-censor. And we got 4 or 5 albums in a row at 80 minutes apiece with bonus tracks every which way, and some of it's just bizarre filler. If I haven't made you link to Fat Slut yet, I am begging you to link to Fat Slut. Just to, as an example of, you know, it was an okay. So this is kind of what I was getting at though. Like, so it all comes around circular back to everything. So, okay. My first Tori record I was quote unquote live for was Scarlet's Walk. That was the first record where I was a fan. I had all the previous records and I was ready to buy the new record when it came out so I could be part of what was going on. And Scarlet's Walk is probably her second or third most beloved record. It was a really cool time to be a fan. It was one of the most successful she had been. She was on the cutting edge of new media and blending the use of the internet with the ability to like update the album. And if you put the CD in your CD-ROM, it took you to a special website with bonus tracks. And it was a really interesting time. And the record after that was not as well received, not as good a record. Sold very poorly, really did hurt her fan base quite a bit. The Beekeeper marks a tremendous end in sales success. And when you contextualize it, it was her seventh or eighth record in 14 years. And she went from being the young piano rock goddess. And I'm rambling, but what I'm kind of more trying to say is, I agree, The Beekeeper, when it came out and had three good songs out of 19, it didn't make me love the feeling of Scarlet's Walk any less. But I'll be really honest, The Beekeeper did make me kind of write Tori off for a little while. And I was kind of like, yeah, I'm just not interested in her new stuff anymore. And I still loved the old stuff. I still played the old stuff. I just didn't care about the next thing anymore. And I think that's what Chris means. Like, you're kind of like, you're trading in on your brand. I don't think he means, well, now when people go back and listen to the old stuff, they're going to be like, this is that time that Michael Jackson licensed Revolution for a Nike ad. I think he more meant like, well, now anything that does come out is going to be tainted by the fact that you told us you were done and you came back from being done to make a steaming pile of shit. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's like the kind of the concept of, is it better to burn out or fade away? You don't get to do both. Like, he had...
You don't get to do both.
Yeah, he had his moment. And, funny thing, that you mentioned that Tori Amos album. I'm pretty sure, so there was a point where I was, you know, we were kind of sharing music, and you were opening me to new things, and vice versa. Like, and there was a point where I was like, oh man, he got me into Liz Phair and Ani DiFranco. And then the first Tori Amos album to drop during that period where I was like, I trust Nico. Was that Tori? I now remember, like, it was the Beekeeper, and I listened to that, and I went, I don't get it. And you saying that is like a disaster piece of an album, I just find that really funny.
It's universally, when I say it is universally considered Tori's low point in her career, she herself calls it the end of an era of music. She'd run out of songs in those genres. Like, the universe agrees that is the low point of her career.
I think Disappointments is a good way to jump into the music that we've all heard. Because as interesting as it is, and as much as I liked this album, I will say that Kendrick Lamar's Damn kind of disappointed me a little bit.
I think you're crazy.
Well,
I love this record, but I do not think I think you need the complete collector's edition to really get what I want out of it. I'm just going to say something really intense. Every time I look at a picture of Kendrick Lamar, I'm always like, wait, that voice comes out of him?
That's fair.
I don't know what I think it is, but I expect Kendrick to have a very different voice than he has.
I want to clarify. I think this album was a little bit of a disappointment in that same way that in like when did Breaking Bad go off the air? Like 2011? In 2014, people would be talking about Breaking Bad and basically like sucking it off every time they talked about it. I'd be like, you know, I kind of think Breaking Bad was like a little overrated. And before I could get like the next sentence out of my mouth,
you are full of hot takes right now, and I'm not appreciating it.
Literally, exactly.
I actually completely agree with him. Breaking Bad is a solid B plus.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's overrated in that it's not the greatest television show of all time. But for Breaking Bad fans, that is not enough. It must be number one instead of like number eight or number nine.
I actually do think that it has two best things ever. I think Skyler is the most real version of that along for the ride of disaster character. And I think Gus Fring is the scariest supervillain in television history.
And also it has the best hour of TV that I've ever seen in Ozymandias, but you know.
And that's kind of, I mean, here's,
who's to
that's
say?
Kind of what I'm saying. Everyone put Damn at number one. It's the best album of the year. And it's like top 10, but it's...
I was about to say, number nine!
Yeah, it's not, for me, it's not the best one. I felt like it was very inconsistent. And it had a very odd pace to it, and people say, ah, but if you play it backwards, I don't care. The album that came out is not that. Like, change the track list.
Well, just listen to it backwards. That's what you were driving me crazy, because I was like, look, you're supposed to play it backwards, he wants you to play it backwards, all this different stuff, and you're like, oh, I'm not going to listen to it that way. Like, I just don't
care.
That's
like saying that The Wizard of Oz has to be watched with, like, Dark Side of the Moon or something like that. Like, if it's not the thing that is put out, why are you expecting me, like, to have to do all of this stuff that's out of the way?
Just hey, lay off Twin Peaks till we're there. Lay off Twin Peaks till we're there.
I know, and yes, I will have them things to say about Twin Peaks. Essentially the same concept. But I will also, like it's a really good album. Damn is... I don't think a rap song has hit me like Damn since probably something off of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Like, that track is fucking incredible. XXX. Like, there's a lot of really interesting, good shit on this album. It's just, for me, a step back for him.
Well, so, what, are you going to be mad when I say that it's my favorite album of the year? But I also only listened to maybe 15 albums.
Absolutely not.
Why would he be mad? Like, yeah.
I think it's
because
good.
Because Chris is an irrational
fear
monster. I think
it's a good album. Jesus fuck.
No, this is literally the Breaking Bad thing. Chris is saying this is number 9, and you're like... You're like, if this is not number one for you, bitch, I hope you're one of those people that gets hurt in a fail
video. It's like
video.
Listening to a fucking...
It is nuts!
It's like listening to a fucking Patriots fan. Bro, if we don't win the fucking Super Bowl this year, then Brady just needs to fucking retire, alright? If we only get to the AFC Championship game, bro, I'm gonna fucking kill myself. I don't know what it is that about some art that just brings out, like, the all-or-nothing response in some human beings. Like, this album was good. It just wasn't...
Like Gaga fans. I'm sorry, but like Gaga fans... She was, like, literally a goddess in, like, policing her fandom and, like, making them be nicer to people, but Gaga fans were nuts.
I certainly... When you give, like, your entire fan base a name and an identity, I feel like you are playing with fire and making... You're putting up a barrier to entry that assholes are going to, like, enforce.
Yes. Okay, I'm sorry, keep going.
No, that's it. So that's Kendrick. Kendrick's album was great. It's in my top 10. It's, I think, in all of our top 10s, just, you know... different places on it. Let's talk about the two pop albums that I know we both heard this year, and that is Kesha's Rainbow and Lorde's Melodrama.
Okay, I want to give a little bit of background here.
Sure.
I do, because I want to say that, honestly, I was not going to give Melodrama another listen.
Same.
I'd already felt like that I couldn't tell you what it was I didn't love about it, but there was something I just didn't love about it, and I wasn't going to give it another listen. But, you know, my buddy over here, Joey, was like, no, I'm telling you, it's actually a shining star no matter who you are. And I'm really glad that I did. I'm actually really, really glad that I did, because it's, you know, I think what I found jarring about it is it's not the vocal performance I wanted from her. I actually think she has, I don't know, it almost, I felt like she was being a little affected on the vocals on, like, the whole record. But it is some of the strongest songwriting, like, ever.
Yeah, I think that is her thing, and it's actually, it works better here because she is, I think this album is about being, I love how honest it is, it's like literally about being successful too young, like the whole album, pretty much, and I don't think anything, so you said that you weren't going to give this album a re-listen. I actually was never going to give it a listen because I didn't like Pure Heroine.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I liked both of them.
And I'm so glad that I did listen to it. I didn't love Greenlight when it dropped, but we'll talk about Kesha's. I didn't love the single when it dropped either, but I'm glad I came back to it. But as a whole, it's so much more honest. It's so much more... It's probably the most honest album I've heard this year, and maybe in, like, the last... Well, no, okay, Kesha's. Fair. But about a different
yeah,
thing.
I'm gonna come out swinging for Kesha. Yeah, no, me and Kesha go way.
Lorde's thing is like admitting that she's kind of like a young piece of shit, and that, like, I really almost appreciate that. And the despondency in her voice, I think, works a lot better now than it did when she was, what, like 16 or 17 when that first album dropped. Songs like Homemade Dynamite and The Louvre, I love her little sense of humor that she has, like.
Yeah, though the sense of humor is so great that it makes her a person.
Yeah.
It makes, because, like, I'm so tired of, like, I can't, and I don't mean anything against specific artists when I maybe sometimes use an artist as a stand-in. So, please, I'm not attacking actual Demi Lovato, who I think has said some beautifully brave things and I think needs to be celebrated as a hero. But I think Demi Lovato's music all kind of sounds like the same gay Euro trash from 2002. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's awful. I just think it's kind of generic. And so, like, I don't think that Demi Lovato's music has the personality that Demi Lovato's spirit that contains. I think Lorde's music would put a cigarette out on me. I think Lorde's personality is so ferocious, and it's actually darkly funny. She doesn't, like, have,
absolutely,
like, a ha-ha sense of humor. She's got kind of, like, a dark irony sense of humor in a lot of places. And I just really, yeah, the songwriting blows my mind.
And also, really quickly, talking about Lord in 2017, to plug a podcast, I could really use a bump from a successful podcast like this one. Lord was on Marc Maron's podcast, and the interview was amazing.
I'm sure.
She was so, so good on that. So if you haven't
listened, nailed that.
Go listen to that.
I just like little things, like, again, like, just the little inflections in her voice to kind of punctuate almost, not necessarily punchlines, but just, like, really clever stuff, you know. Our love, our relationship is so amazing, they could hang it in the Louvre. In the back, but hey, still the Louvre. Like, stuff like that, I love it. There's not a song on there that, like, I'm waiting for her to drop a song that really hits me emotionally. I think that's the big thing that's missing from this album. But songs like Homemade Dynamite...
Wait, no, there's one song on there. I gotta bring up the track listing. There's one song on there that, like, really...
Not,
hits me. Hold on.
Not Supercut.
I haven't listened to it.
I think Supercut's almost what they, like, a slow version of Supercut could potentially do it, but it's and it, there's so there's
well,
such simple.
So Writer in the Dark, I love.
Yeah, but it's good. Don't get me wrong. And I think there's some stuff she's doing on this album that she wouldn't get away with on another, like on her first album, like Loveless Generation as a chorus. Probably she couldn't have gotten away with a couple of years ago. There's not a song that makes me want to die. And I think the style of her music, that she's going to get there one day. I just wish it was on this album.
Yeah, that's good note. That's my relationship with Bruno Mars this year. He finally won me. I don't know what it is, but finally. What's that, the current single, the one with Cardi B that I just pretend Cardi B's not on?
I could not fucking tell you.
Oh, it's so good.
See ya on Now 68 in 2026.
Finesse. It is fucking incredible. It is incredible. He won me over. And yeah, that's what I get you're saying. She is an artist destined for greatness. She's an artist destined to have her incredible Tortured Soul album have a documentary made about it. And she's very reclusive, and she's very, you know, tortured on it. And yeah, no, 100%. I get it. I'm with you.
It's exciting that we're seeing her develop.
Yeah.
Just.
But she got famous too young.
Much, and that's what this album's about. And she's handling it really well. There's a maturity here that I can't believe is coming out of an artist that on her second album. Like, fuck the sophomore slump, man. Like, she's knocked this one out of the park, in my opinion.
Yeah.
A song like Sober, like, I can't believe that's coming from someone who's on their second album and is, like, 22 or something.
And, you know, it's that thing that there's a meme going around that the royal baby can speak two languages and knows how to imply people are servants and speak down to people and several more. And, you know, there's a caption on it that's, wow... It sounds like wealth and access lead to advantages in life. Yeah, who would have guessed?
Exactly.
And I'm not shitting on Lord in any way. No, far from it. But, you know, she is somebody who's taking advantage of the fact that by virtue of her success, she has access to great minds. And that's a really great thing. Not to bring up my personal story again, but... She asked Peter Gabriel, what's the one piece of advice you can give me when she met him? And he said, build your own studio so you control your own masters, or the label controls your masters, and then you don't control what happens to them. Mm. So the first thing she did with the money from her first album was build her own
studio. I guess that's a pretty good transition into talking about Kesha, who... We're lucky this album exists.
Oh, gosh, this record. Well, okay, so... I had been praying this record would come to me every minute of every day for several years. So, but Joey, what was your relationship with Kesha before she was well-respected critically?
I only knew the singles. The reason I listened to this album, aside from you guys, actually, it might have even been before you guys, I don't know. But my favorite podcast, Never Not Funny, the guys on there, they're all, the two co-hosts are both straight guys in their 40s and 50s, and they both love and adore Kesha. And they've loved her since the beginning, and so for years they've been talking about her, like, ongoing legal battle and everything. And then this album came out, they're like, this is incredible. And I was like, let me just see what this is all about. And I was like, oh my god. And by that point, you guys had said, you know, or at least Nico had said, you need to listen to Rainbow. And then I remember when I first listened to it, I was driving up to my friend's house, to my Zack Attack and Magic Mike's and Boyfriend Material and Too Fast, Too Forever co-host Joe Two's house. And I remember I was at a stoplight and I texted you guys and I was like, holy shit, this album. And you were like, right? And then Chris, I think, went and listened to it in short order.
It took me a little while, yeah.
It is good.
I was behind on this album because Kesha was also a singles person. I had heard the other albums, but for the most part, I felt like her early albums and, knowing that she was not controlling her career to the extent now that we know, I'm less surprised how much filler there was on her first albums. I felt like her early albums were not cover-to-cover bangers. There was a lot of just, like, ugh, in between there.
That's why she could put out, like, 1,000 albums a year.
Yeah. Exactly. So I liked Kesha. Like, I love, what's the name of that song?
Blow.
No.
Nope. Die Young.
Die Young. I love Die Young. And then there's the closing track on Animal, which I think is called Animal, is fantastic. So there's stuff that's not singles that is good. But then you've got stuff like Blah 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 and that song with 303, which you can fucking keep.
Those are the same song.
And something I do really appreciate on this album is that she's kind of lost that character she's been playing, but not entirely. It feels so much more organic now that she's not Kesha with the dollar sign, that she's like
Kesha with the personality. Her own person.
Yeah, and I was blown away when I read that her mother helped write a bunch of this album. It's not like she just like was like, hey mom, do this. Like, her mom was a songwriter when she was younger. But I think that's really fucking cool. And this album feels so much more organic than any other Kesha album does. And I saw an interview with her where the guy interviewing her was like, I don't remember how they transitioned to it, but he was like, you've got pipes. And she's like, I know, I finally get to show people that. And just her performances on this album are so much better than anywhere else. That dumb voice that goes like this is like gone. She hits that fucking high E in Praying that is just like, fuck me, how?
Yeah,
how?
We'll talk about that.
I mean, I almost feel like this is warranting like a I almost feel like this warrants like a track by track thing, but like, let's just talk about what we think are the high points of this album.
Okay, I'm gonna come into this as the guy who has seen Kesha in concert multiple times, and I'm gonna come into this as the guy who has every deluxe edition of every Kesha record, and I'm gonna be that faggot for about 5 minutes. I'll try to keep it down to two, but you know, when people would ask me why I love Kesha, and you know, when she is just literally a drunk, I mean, she's like, act like, you know, her performance, her character was horrific, and I'm like, but here's the thing, you have to ask yourself, do you hear Kesha getting into the shit that everybody's saying that Miley gets into, and Selena, true, yeah, and Justin Bieber, do you hear Kesha in any of that? No? Okay, and you see Kesha's name on every one of her songwriting credits? Oh, okay, and you hear Kesha is writing for other artists? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think the lesson here is she actually, that was a character, but that character is part of who she is. And there's actually so many sides to who she is that she wants to show. And I do think this benefited from the fact that she had years to refine it. This wasn't just a record she got out in a year about pain. This was a record she had plenty of time to shape into the perfect release. And the fact that she went from Kesha dumb party girl to Kesha the fucking singer-songwriter nominated for multiple Grammys, and you can suck a dick if you don't like it, but that bitch is gonna go home with gold this year. And she got to write a song that released the demons of her famous rapist who tried to destroy her career for looking for justice. What the fuck do you even say to that? And in the entire time she's doing this, in this entire time she's fighting for her freedom and herself and her mind and her everything, she's still writing songs like Woman, and if you read her manifesto about it, it's not just for women. It's for anyone who needs to pump themselves up and feel good about who they are. It's a song meant to celebrate just being a crazy bitch. And I think there are some points where I'm like, you don't need Praying and Him together. Like, that's a little cloying. But, you know, her mom has always been a part of her songwriting process, and now her mom gets to be front and center with her. And she got to do a song that her mom wrote for Dolly Parton, and she, you know, it's a crowning achievement in her career in the first place, but the fact that it was born of being told that she was never going to be worth it again is 10 times more beautiful than anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I loved it. The only thing I don't love about it is that that woman was played at the end of Bad Moms 2, which I felt was a little on the nose. But I mean, I just love it. I don't have anything really else to say about it. I think, I do have something else to say. I completely forgot. So I realized this year, while listening to that album, that my perfect band, my ideal band, is Kesha singing over Eagles of Death Metal music. Like, that is exactly what I want. Those two songs are both great. I know that Chris hates Boogie Feet, maybe, but like, Let Him Talk and Boogie Feet, like, I love both of those. And like, I love that like harder rock background, but like with like really cool, powerful, strong lady voice in front. And like, those songs, I was like, oh, I would sort of been like, I kind of knew how to articulate what I loved, and then when I heard that, I was like, oh no, this is exactly it. So like, when people are like, what kind of music you're like, I like this song. Like, if you give me this is exactly what I want.
I would like a genre of these two songs, please.
Give me all of these songs, please.
I mean, I think Boogie Feet is the worst song on the album, but like, it's still not, you know, it's the Kendrick Lamar spot on the album. It's still not the worst thing in history. It's the album as a whole, just if you think about it, like, how much of this would you have never expected coming from Kesha? Opening with a slow acoustic song, which fucking rules. Songs with the Eagles of Death Metal, songs with Dolly, a bunch of country stuff. Dolly Parton shows up here. Hunt
You
Down.
If you actually check her, like, early demos, like the demos that leaked years ago that she used to get her label deal, this is literally, like, this was all her wheelhouse. Like, this is...
Sure,
I mean... Yeah, her early demos reflected a lot of this, and but it's so great to get to see that now.
For non-Nicopedia people who didn't know that, like, songs like Hunt You Down and the one with Dolly Parton are such, like, amazing breaths of, like, it's just like, wow, this is, I'm so glad this Kesha got to emerge. It's just, like, it fucking sucks. Like, the last year and a half, like, obviously, like, but, like, oh, Godzilla might be my favorite track of the year, I'm not gonna lie. like, that song makes me so fucking happy.
Yeah.
We couldn't possibly have this discussion if we didn't briefly talk about Cut to the Feeling by Carly Rae Jepsen as a single. It's great.
Love it.
Do we need to go? We could save it for the emotion minute, which whenever, you know, that fictitious podcast that definitely will never exist, but we'll keep talking about it.
We can talk about it now. Like, we could talk about how this is the only song all year that I listened to 30 times in a row and felt like it wasn't enough.
I want to do a live stream of all listening to her new record when it comes out.
Oh, we have to do that.
Wait.
Yeah.
Does she have a new album coming out this year?
She said at live shows that she's recorded, like, or she's written, like, 100 more songs.
Yeah. But again, I just need to say my thing one more time. When the more these demos leak, the more I'm like, no, no, no. You use the same 7 words in every single song. It is like the 7 dwarves in this piece, because every single song is about going to emotion and having emotion. And, you know, I don't think multiple songs have stealing bikes, but you know what I'm saying.
But you say that like it's a bad thing.
No, no, no. I even love the thematic entanglement.
All right, Max Landis.
But at the same time, fuck, God, I got unpopular real fast.
Can we just talk about how that's like the worst thing to happen? Well, Max Landis in general is the worst thing. One of the worst things to happen to Isaiah. Yeah. But that Carly Rae Jepsen fucking like Unabomber manifesto, it was just missing a fucking section about how recycling wasn't real, to be full on just the dumbest fucking thing in the world this year.
It's actually not pollution in China. It's chemtrails. So, I think it's really cool, but at the same time, I don't think it's 100 songs then. I think it's 80 songs done, you know, a little extra, done 5/4. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a million different songs.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I do have that fear that another album will let me down because her songwriting is not to the level of a Lorde or a Kesha. But I'm still really excited for any kind of follow-up.
What is happening on this podcast? When did we find it was okay to criticize Carly Rae Jepsen?
It's always okay to criticize the things you love, because if you can't see the weaknesses in the things you love, you can't really appreciate them holistically.
She is infallible. She is our Pope.
I don't know. Have you seen that hair? That
wait, and can I pause you both? I'm the gay one, so if anybody here is legally obligated to think that she is amazing and wish that I nursed from her teats as a child, it is me. And I'm still like, it's a great record. I don't feel the same way about the first two, and I don't necessarily know that it's a progressive step. I think Emotion is a beautiful pop masterpiece, but, you know, some of the stuff I've heard about the next record and some of the stuff that's kind of leaked, I'm sort of like, I don't like that she said she listened to nonstop ABBA, whatever, before going into the studio.
I think it's always good to be... to lower your expectations when something is coming out to follow up something that was like mind-blowingly good and change the game, or else I think the only thing that there can possibly be is disappointment in a follow-up to Emotion.
Yeah.
100%. I think we have to temper our expectations just ever so slightly. I think it could still be good, but again, you know, to kind of do that Kendrick Lamar Breaking Bad thing, I think it's not going to rock us like Emotion did. I don't think anything possibly could, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
I was going to completely change the subject here, and we can maybe get into this inside of me. I don't know. But, like, talking about TV for a second, which is way more my wheelhouse than music, but, like, The Leftover Season 2 was so good and, like, was so perfect and so pure, and everything about it I loved. And I was like, there's no way Season 3 can be as good. And then guess what? Season 3 was even better. And so maybe whatever this 2018 album from Carly Rae Jepsen is the Season 3 leftovers to the Season 2 leftovers that is Emotion. So maybe... you know, it could be my favorite thing in the world, and then the sequel is even better. Like, maybe that is what we're... that might be setting things up a little bit too ambitious, but that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, and let me even jump in to go back to music, not to purposely cut you out, Joey, but to purposely cut Joey out. I have this thing about... So, Chris will remember that, and I'm not being a hipster about it, I swear to God, I'm just making the point so that when I attack this person senselessly, I sound... I don't think it defends me at all. I've loved John Mayer since before he was a national thing. I've loved John Mayer since you had to get his fucking EP from shows. Like, when I say I loved John Mayer before other people had heard of him, I loved John Mayer when it was easy to get tickets for $10. I loved John Mayer when it was easy to get tickets to live tapings of night shows, and I saw him do multiple nighttime shows in the New York area because he was nobody yet. And he was still having... acts put as his opening act by his label, not his choice. So, like, but I don't know that he is necessarily the god that everybody likes to say he is. I think he's super talented, and I love him, and I think he's got brilliant songwriting, but I don't think he is this super god. And I think, you know, he did Room for Squares, which was super incredible, and then he did Heavier Things, which was pretty great, all things considered. And then everybody sort of like cumgasmed over Continuum nonstop, relentlessly, 1,000 times, and you know what? I even think it's a really great record. But it does not feel like the logical progression of the artist of the first two albums, and in a TV show, you really do hope that the next season is a logical progression of the previous season in a way that explores the themes further. But in a record is a cut and dry thing. It's a one and done. Now, if you do a second volume, or you do a bonus EP, or you do an alternate takes, or you just, I don't know, you crumple the record up and you fuck yourself with the shards on stage. I don't know what you want to do. But if you do more of it, with it, in it, that's great. But because records are these unique things, I kind of think it's more like saying, what's the next show from the creators of The Leftovers? Than The Leftovers Season 3 from The Leftovers Season 2, because albums are so unrelated to each other in so many ways.
Yeah.
People well, can in just that regard,
change genres.
In that regard, then, I mean, you could say Damon Lindelof made Lost, which is maybe my favorite TV show of all time. Like, what's he going to follow that up with? And it's like, oh, The Leftovers, my second favorite TV show of all time. And so even in that regard, I have hope for Emotion Side C, I guess, because we have Side B. So
no, that already exists. They put out a re-release of Side B that has Cut to the Feeling on it that is called Side C. Yeah.
Is it really? Well, then Side D.
Yes.
But there is no Side D. Whatever's next isn't Side
D. Not Emotion.
Whatever's next is, you know, is Chorus Factor Rainbow. And Chorus Factor Rainbow is going to fuck name it that.
Yeah, that's woman, a really please. Good name.
But... But Chorus Factor Rainbow is going to be this incredible record that is its own thing. And I just have to say this, and I have to say it because I have to say it. There's a book called Disney War, and if you read Disney War, it's all about how Eisner rose to power and then lost his mind. And it's actually by the guy that wrote Den of Thieves, who was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. So it's not like by like Pauly Short's cousin or anything. It's like, you know, it's a legitimate nonfiction investigative journalist who got permission to be in the boardroom and shit. And the fascinating thing about Lost is Lost's whole existence is because Michael Eisner passed on Survivor and then regretted it when it was a huge hit and demanded that they write a scripted Survivor. And they had written three or four drafts, and every draft was worse than the last. And Damon Lindelof saw it on a pile of scripts when he was there for, like, J.J. Abrams saw the Damon Lindelof version and was like, "Hey, can I look at this and play with it for a little bit?" And that's the whole reason Lost exists. It had been literally passed on repeatedly by ABC over and over again. And the Damon Lindelof draft is, like, the third or fourth draft, so a lot of it he is credited with, you know, because as long as you add 51%, you can, like, put your name on the script, and after a certain number of revisions, a name can be removed from a script. There's no telling even how much was whose idea anymore. It's such a perfect storm of things happening to even exist that J.J. Abrams happened to see it, and it's because Eisner happened to pass on Survivor. Lost's sheer existence proves Lost is magical.
Love it. I love it.
I mean, I'll use an example of something that I enjoyed this year. I always make it, and it's mostly for friends to, you know, just see if they like anything on it, maybe find one new album. I always put out top 25 albums of the year. Joey does the same thing with TV. I think it's a good, not only an exercise for your own creativity, but, you know, if one other person finds something that they wouldn't have found otherwise, I think it was worthwhile. Yeah.
Exactly.
My number 10 was an album called Nocturnal by The Midnight. And The Midnight put out, I think it was either, I forget if it was 2017 or 2016. I think it was 2017. They put out an album that absolutely just changed the genre of retro wave. Like, them and FM84 both dropped albums, and I'm like, you can't pick one over the other. Like, both just came out around the same time, completely changed the genre and turned on its head. It's like, this is the new gold standard. Who the fuck is going to come close to this? And they put out a new album. Maybe it's more like an EP, but it's like they put out a new release this year. And it's not as good as something that completely upended how everyone will see that genre. But that's okay. It's okay that you didn't make another 10, but you made like an 8, and that's fine. No one's disappointed, you know? No one
I thought you were going to say you didn't make another 10. You made a Vitology.
It's just fuck. It's fine. It's fine that something isn't as good as the last one. But I think the important thing is maturity as a songwriter. And that's, I think, where my bigger concern comes from. I hope Carly Rae Jepsen matures as a songwriter, because I'm not sure she did between Kiss and Emotion. I think Emotion's a perfect storm, kind of like you said. And I'm glad it exists. I'm thrilled it exists. It's changed my outlook on pop. It's one of my favorite albums of all time, and it will probably never leave my top 10 albums of all time. I want another album. I don't think it's healthy to expect another Emotion.
Yeah. Ditto.
I'm still going to do it. I'm still going to hope.
And let's just talk about individual... Oh, side note. If you check the cageclub.me link section for this episode, we are going to make a 20-ish song now and again mixtape for 2017, where we put songs that we collectively liked. So you're going to find some Kesha, some Lorde, some Kendrick, and then some individual tracks that we all loved. And you're going to have what we found to be, obviously, cut to the feeling, some stuff that we loved through 2017, so that you can kind of share. You can share this, ride these vibes with us, man. But we're going to talk about some individual things that, maybe either individual tracks that didn't have an album, or like it was just the standout of a otherwise mediocre album. Maybe just some things that one of us has heard and not the others. So we're going to kind of do a roundtable thing here. Let's start off with Nico. Nico, what's your shit from 2017 that maybe we were not in on?
So I'm gonna say the thing that I think everybody should have listened to by now: Utopia by Bjork. Holy fuck!
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm in on that. It's great. We talked about it last episode too. It's
so mind blowing, so mind blowing. But then the things that I think maybe a little bit more under the surface. If you guys like Foster the People, their last EP 3 was super great. I think there was an album that followed it, and if I'm not mistaken, I listened to it once or twice and didn't love it. But those 3 songs on that EP are great. Super duper dug I Miss You by Clean Bandit. They had that song Rather Be with Jess Glynn. That was pretty hot. But then for the stuff that maybe is a little bit more what the fuck are you talking about, Kimbra had Top of the World, as well as Everybody Knows. Kimbra is super brilliant. She had that song Everybody, Somebody That I Used to Know with Gautier. And she had a phenomenal, unbelievable second album. It's one of the bravest pieces of music I know, and its bravery inspired so much of Kid Riot in terms of just go with what you want to do, because I said to myself, if she can be this brave, I can be brave too. but then the things that like are super obscure, I can't recommend Oh Wonder enough. They're this super fun pop duo. Their record Ultra Life was super great, and every single off of it was incredible, but the best song by far is Heavy. Heavy is the sexiest, grooviest jam ever. Gavin Turek's Good Look For You is a phenomenal disco throwback EP. It is so genuinely like the LA gay experience in 5 songs. It's fucking incredible, and she is breathtaking, and her voice is almost unparalleled in terms of like a flawless smooth quality. Please check that out. And if you're listening to some weird shit, please check out Tierra Whack. Mumbo Jumbo is my actual song of the year. Please, actually, I almost wish you guys could play it right now without it like destroying the podcast. But guys, please listen to Mumbo Jumbo by Tierra Whack. It's an experimental style track. The lyrics are literally impossible to understand on purpose, and it's just a phenomenal piece of music. It really, really changed my mind about what would get me to emote how, and that really, that's the point of art. It for me did the thing art needs to do. Obviously, I'm going to plug the new Tori Amos album, Native Invader. It grew on me quite a bit. And then BT has released 3 tracks: The Upside Down, LSTM, and 4. He has
Take
released
a shot,
extended
guys.
Mixes
BT mentioned on the podcast. Take a shot.
Mm-hmm. I know. Right, I do what
Tori,
I can.
Right after a Tori one, someone's drunk out there.
All right, somebody's like, "Gosh, Skotchka." So. There's also extended mixes of all 3 tracks. Please check out the extended mixes, because BT is not meant to be a single edit. He is meant to be 11 minutes of just high as fuck. So I think that takes me through my You Gotta Do It or You'll Dies. I'm sure there was other stuff. I don't think there was anything else where I was shaken in my core that I haven't really talked about on Now and Again. But to say my favorite Now and Again moment one more time was episode 15, The Baby Bash. They did The Baby Bash. It was a baby smash. So that's me. Thanks.
Joey, take it.
So because I'm a basic bitch, Despacito, gotta say that. Gotta give a shout out to the Song of the Summer if it wasn't for Cut to the Feeling. Gotta mention Despacito, the Justin Bieber remix, A+. But what I do want to say, what I listen to probably more than most other music this year, aside from maybe like Kendrick and maybe Lorde and maybe a couple other albums, there is this duo called Hammock, and they did the score for this movie Columbus that came out last year, which was directed by this guy Koganada, who did a bunch of short videos, like 10-minute videos on Vimeo, and he did one on the Criterion disc for a Soderbergh movie. And this guy Koganada made this really beautiful movie called Columbus, and the score to that is incredible. And then I looked up Hammock, and they put out an album this year called Mysterium, and that's incredible. It's just instrumental, sort of like a, like, I think Apple Music calls like an ambient soundscape, if you want to get a real, you know, pretentious about it. But it's just beautiful. And then also, as we're recording this, you know, as you're listening to this, a couple of weeks ago on my podcast Boyfriend Material, we covered Blade Runner 2049, and the score to that is incredible too. And that was done by Hans Zimmer, which I feel like he's gotten this like sort of like bad rap. Like, you can hear the scores from like the Christopher Nolan Batman movies and be like, oh, like that's what he is now. But like, you hear Blade Runner and it's just like, oh, this is amazing. And so I feel like these like instrumental sort of, not necessarily passive listening, but sort of, you know, not active listening, not, you know, getting hit with emotions like you did on the Kesha album, but like these, the album by, you know, I guess both, you know, the Columbus soundtrack and Mysterium by Hammock, and then the Blade Runner score are just great.
Nico, did you see 2049?
No, because I'm the most basic bitch. I saw Moana, and I really liked that.
Okay. I will refer people back to to Now and Again 15 for some stuff I liked, but I'll try to be brief. Singles. So, maybe this is part of the disappointments of 2017. An indie artist called Kississippi. I expected a full album out of her this year, and didn't get it. Just got some EP stuff and a new single release called Cut Your Teeth, which is, it's great. So that's a very light disappointment, is that we didn't get a full album from Kississippi. The Bomb Pops finally did put out their full album. The Bomb Pops are a female-fronted punk band from California. They were supposed to start an album a couple of years ago with No Use for a Name's Tony Sly producing, and then he died. So stuff got delayed and shifted, and they put out a single called California in July that is just, it's like just great, perfect, like 2 minutes of fast, like early NoFX, but fronted by women style, you know, power pop punk. And it's fucking really great. And then the rest of the album is just like there. Taylor Swift's album kind of sucked. Reputation was trash, in my opinion, but I liked the track New Year's Day, the closer, specifically the version that she performed on Jimmy Fallon. The actual album version is like overlong and poorly produced, but I really loved her live performance of New Year's Day. And on that note, for me, it was a really great year for indie women, like indie rock fronted by women. So many of the albums on my top 25 are that, and so many albums that from artists that I didn't like previously. I mean, we kind of mentioned Lorde already, though she's not indie rock. But like Saint Vincent's album was my favorite album of the year, and I never really got on the Saint Vincent train like a lot of people did. But Mass Seduction just absolutely rocked my world and blew me away. At the same time, SZA, again, not indie rock, but an artist who put out an album that I didn't really vibe with a couple of years ago, put out a blowaway album for me with Control, spelled like it is on your keyboard, CTRL, not the full word. And Waxahachie.
Actually, just real quick about SZA is that, you know, how much you loved her and Kendrick last year, they already put out what's probably the best song of this year so far, yeah, right, for the Black Panther album. So
yes. And then, yeah, Waxahachie put out an album that I never really vibed on Waxahachie, and this is by far her best album. Another surprise was Tim Heidecker. Yes, that Tim Heidecker of Tim and Eric put out an album called Too Dumb for Suicide, which is a concept album about Donald Trump that is extremely worth listening to if you're okay with just like laughing about how terrible everything is sometimes, because sometimes you just have to laugh or else you'll go insane, and this album is kind of great for that. My other favorite albums of the year that came out, we talked about a bunch of them that are in my top 10 already, including The Midnight, Kaitana, I'm not sure, a bunch of Philly girls put out a great indie rock album. Iron Chic, C-H-I-C, just put out a pop punk.
Oh my god, no, it's Iron Chic.
Iron Chic, like the wrestler, but spelled differently.
Yeah, that's very punny.
Yeah.
That's very punny.
Put out
very
an album clever. Called like You Can't Stay Here, which is, it's super like melodic punk with like a tinge of hardcore from the lead singer, with really fun gang vocal style sing-alongs and great lyrics. Blew me away, kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't even see this album until like mid-December, but immediately jumped into my top 10. Just fucking fantastic fun rock, which is a breath of fresh air when every other like mainstream rock band that's coming out now just sounds like fucking Imagine Dragons, and you can fucking keep that. And then lastly, Charlie Bliss, again, female fronted indie rock from, I think they're from New York, put out an album that sounds like Veruca Salt or like any of those early 90s alternative female-fronted bands. Julian Baker's Turn Out the Lights is an album that is probably the closest I will ever get to a religious experience. It is a very slow, dark album about from a 23-year-old girl who has already dealt with depression and addiction, and it rocked me to my fucking core, and it is beautiful. And it's tough to recommend to people. Not tough in the way like that Mount Erie album this year about his fucking wife dying, like that. It's different. It's not quite that brutal, but it's a tough listen. But it'll get you if it gets you. And then
it's great.
Yeah, and then like I said, Mass Seduction. I think I fucking loved it. A track like I think New York is probably going to be the one that's on the mixtape. There's just so many different styles on that, and she actually got a lot of shit. Well, shit. But like reviewers, if there was a negative, it was like it's too all over the place. Nah, I think this is her best album. Like, and it's not even close. So yeah, that's kind of the stuff I loved. Anyone else got some final thoughts for music before we move on?
I actually had a bummer that occurred to me. A whole lot of records were supposed to come out this year and didn't.
Mm.
And that was really disappointing. For whatever reason, the Kimbra record was actually supposed to be out today, and it got moved to 420.
I think she just wanted to move it to 420. Like, hey, smoke them if you got them.
I wish, because I think it's more like it wasn't done.
That's probably more case, yeah.
Michelle and Diggiacello's cover album got pushed back to, I think they said March now, and it was supposed to be out in November.
That wasn't even on my radar, but now I'm kind of excited for that.
She released a single. It's a cover of Tender Love. It's super fucking great. You know, she's an artist who has never done two consecutive records in the same genre, so you kind of never know what you're going to get, but the last three or four records have been pretty heavily acoustic guitar, and she is quite an unpredictable performer. She really is something else. So if I have a complaint, it's we should have had more records to talk about this year, but we didn't. Oh, actually, I have one thing I do need to say. 2017 signaled Fergie finally getting out this second record. Congratulations, Fergie. You've been trying to release this record since like 2013 or something. Like, this record is seriously way overdue. The singles have been coming out forever. And I like the new single, and I think Fergie's pretty cool, and I think MILF Money is one of the funniest pieces of art I've ever seen.
It's a hell of a pun.
And the music video is great, too.
Final thoughts, Joey?
I have two other notes about music that I forgot to talk about. Number one, Queens of Stone Age Villains is a great album, and I keep worrying. Like, when you have a favorite band, and the Queens of Stone Age is probably my top two or three. Maybe my favorite non-Radiohead band. I know you guys love Radiohead on this podcast.
Love them. Love them. My favorite Radiohead track is "Oi, me phone is yelling at me again."
My favorite Radiohead track is by Lana Del Rey.
Hey man. Oh, we didn't talk about Lana either. Hold.
Oh, that album.
We are rushing through music. Yeah. I listened to like eight albums. We didn't talk about four of them.
I don't like Lana Del Rey.
When you have a favorite band, I always worry. I guess sort of the same thing with Carly Rae Jepsen. Like, you worry that the new album's not going to be as good, and like Villains is great. Like, I mean, it's not Songs for the Deaf, but nothing's Songs for the Deaf, and like it's great. And just like Clockwork, it's great. Lana's album is great. And I also want to say, I'm just thumbing through my iPhone right now, looking at albums I have downloaded, and two soundtracks, again, Baby Driver's soundtrack and the Atomic Blonde soundtrack, not necessarily new music, but new takes or new collections of music from movies from last year that just, you know, bringing old things new again, or, you know, new versions or new ways or whatever, and I think that was kind of a cool coincidence that there were two movies that both I really liked that had really, really cool soundtracks that, you know, highlighted some older songs I wasn't too familiar with.
Yeah, isn't it cool when, like, movies and TV, TV does it all the time now, use music really well? I think my favorite musical moment in film is probably the use of the chain in Guardians 2. I really loved that.
It's really good. Are you talking about ever, or are you just talking about from last year?
Oh, last year. Because it's still, we'll talk about it next now and again, stay tuned, my favorite use of music ever in a movie. But no, this past year, that's next. This year, no, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Baby Driver, I think, falls in that Kendrick range where it was good, but not as good as I wanted it to be.
Baby Driver as a movie is not as good as it should be. Like, the opening scene is exactly what I want the whole movie to be, and it never reaches that again.
It's like up.
But the soundtrack is great. The Harry Styles album was apparently great, but I didn't find an hour to listen to that. Did either of you listen to that? Is that good?
Did not listen.
I have listened to a bunch of the One Direction boys' music. Some of it's pretty okay. A lot of it, without getting that preachy, sanctimonious shit I get into every episode, it's not that it's not good art, and it's not that I just don't get it. No, it's not aimed for me. It's not built around the sensorial experiences that their age group shares, that built their common interest across a genre that creates popular artists. I just don't fucking understand why nobody minds that music is completely undynamic now, and that's just me.
Well, I guess, you know, we're actually a little under where I thought we'd be, so I'll throw one more question out there, and you guys can take a minute to think about it if you need to. Any musical wishes or things that you know are coming out that you're excited for in 2018?
I'm going to say it again. Kimbra. The Golden Echo was one of the bravest things I've ever heard recorded. I really can't wait to hear Primal Heart. We've gotten a couple of singles. They're really good. I'm pretty stoked. The upcoming Michel Dighiaccio cover album has some pretty obscure, cool covers, but a couple of them are by the same writing team that Janet Jackson's always worked with, including one by Janet, which is really exciting. The record was actually born of needing to find a way to deal with the loss of Prince and needing to cover his music to help cope with losing him. I know there's a bunch of people that I'm super into that have albums coming out this year, and I'm blanking for some reason. I think the big thing that I really want from 2018 is I feel like everything's kind of, I am most frequently introduced to new music when I'm at the gym, and you know, the gym radio station, every other song is either old, or it's an old song, and then it's a really new song, and then it's a recent song, and then it's a really new song, and then it's an old song, and then it's a really new song, etc. And I get exposed to a lot of things that way, and I think it's really interesting because I find so many of the male voices identical. I find so many of the female voices identical. And what I'm looking for isn't even diversity of song character anymore. I just want to hear a different fucking voice for a change. Like, I hope there is some dynamic shift in what we find resonantly pleasing again, because I am a little bit bored. Oh, and I have one thing that didn't come out this year, but fuck me if I didn't discover it way too late. I don't know if they're Dance or DNCE, the Joe Jonas Band.
Oh,
that shit's actually really
cake
good.
By the Ocean Cake guys? By the Ocean People.
Yes, Cake by the Ocean People. I actually really enjoy the fuck out of that record. I'm not even kidding. It's actually kind of fun. Listen to it a bunch at the gym. Fuck you both.
Joey?
Fuck you very much.
I don't have anything, you know, I don't have any expectations because I don't listen to a ton of music, as I keep saying on this podcast. But I would just like to see new albums from artists that I really like that haven't put out an album in a couple of years. Maybe like Florence and the Machine could be a cool year. I would like to see maybe a new, I don't know if there's any plans for like a Thom Yorke solo album, or like, you know, maybe a new album from Grimes, or maybe a new album from Kanye. Or
I've heard rumblings of new Kanye.
All these people that like, you know, people that put out albums 2 or 3 years ago. Like, I got a new Queens album last year. I got, you know, new Kendrick last year. Like, there's just people that I like that I want to see more of. And, you know, I usually don't find out something's coming out until, like, the week of. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. That's new. So, just give me more of what I like. And I will keep listening to this very podcast and get new recommendations, and also our Facebook Messenger chat, but get new recommendations from you guys about things that I should be absorbing, because I did really appreciate what you said last week, or last month, sorry, the last episode, 15B, about how if you are not doing the work, if you're not putting the work in to get new music, you're doing it wrong. And I really feel like that's sort of true of movies too, and kind of to an extent TV, although TV is still sort of easier to find. But I feel like if you do more work finding movies, if you go hunt out things at your local indie theater, or you like look into what's only on demand or whatever, it's the same thing with music. Like, you're gonna find things that are exactly what you want, that aren't just pushed out to the masses. So I'm gonna keep listening to this, keep getting your recommendations, maybe do a little bit of work, try to find things on my own, but just hoping for more things that I like, and also finding new things that I like.
Cool. I guess I'll wrap this up. I'll say that in 2018, I like I said, I have heard rumblings of a new Kanye album, and I do hope we get it. I would love to. So this is just like an entirely personal thing. You know, in the last couple of years, Blink-182 like came back, and Tom DeLonge was like, "I'm gonna go find aliens." That's how he sounds, and he left the band, or was kicked out of the band, or whatever, and they brought in Matt Skiba, who is one of my favorite songwriters of all time, and he's just, like, kind of, like, in Blink-182 now. So if he's gonna, like, I feel like he doesn't have impetus to, like, be in Alkaline Trio anymore, and if that's the case, I hope we get, like a farewell album, like a one last album or one last tour from them, because I think they need it. They are stalwarts of their genre. So many bands have come and gone that have tried to emulate them and just like did for a minute and then faded away. We talked about how My Chemical Romance did that on the last Now and Again. Like they're fucking like they deserve to go out on a note. Like they deserve to go out. And I hope that he will make another record with them. And part of me does want it to be a farewell album. And it's been over 20 years now with them as a band. You know, if he's going to have his priorities other places, maybe it's time to hang it up. As sad as that would make me, though there has been some decline in their songwriting. Also, I know that Brian Fallon of the Gaslight Anthem is putting out his second solo album. This first solo album was kind of just like a bad Gaslight Anthem album. So one of my wishes is that he finds his own kind of songwriting style, even though he wrote all the songs for Gaslight Anthem. So I guess it's kind of hard to find your own songwriting style when you are the songwriter. I hope he differentiates his own solo sound from the Gaslight Anthems. We talked about Carly a lot. I want to hear a new album, and I want to not be sad by it. For all of my Cage Club and Now and Again buddies who were on this episode, we'll catch you on the flip side.